to other people. And that's why I always put in the email, just like, I know things happen, like no hard feelings or anything like that. We'll just reschedule it. I'm not on any kind of crazy schedule or anything like that. So okay. I'm glad to have you on here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be able to have this conversation with you. So
yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So where do you want to start? Do you want to kind of tell me a little bit about yourself? I read through what you sent in the email, but you know what? I kind of feel like conversation is always a better way to get to know somebody. So do you want to just kind of jump in and share a little bit about what you're working on and some of your background? I'd love to learn a little bit about you because I did like zero research, as I always say.
Okay, sure. So I was born, I'm currently in New York City, but I was originally born in Japan and moved to Hawaii at a very early age, at 3 months old. Okay. I had a rather unusual life. I'm a former child prodigy. And so I had my first piano lesson at the age of 9 months and made my television debut at the age of 3 years old. I was performing a Heidegger concerto, reading from a novel, doing algebra, things like that. And at age eight, I made my professional debut. And so I have been working since the age of eight. I began touring the world since that age. And that's what I did for most of my life, for about 2 decades. I was a concert pianist, a world-renowned soloist, everything over 30 countries and played in all the great halls of the world. Made my Carnegie Hall debut at 17, which was when I first landed in New York. I was based here for quite a while. I went to Columbia, Juilliard. I went to college here. And then eventually I ended up living in Europe. I was based in Holland and then in Spain for many years as my European career emerged. And during that time, you know, I had the opportunity to do many things, of course, as a musician, including being a cultural ambassador for the United States and being an artistic ambassador for UNICEF. I got to do some humanitarian work in Africa, in Central Asia. And so I did that for many, many years. That was my life. And then I decided to leave it. I decided to leave that career for many reasons. But I decided to try something new. And I ended up becoming a fiction author. I'm the author of 8 novels. And in addition to that, while my sort of author career was sort of taking off, at the same time, my sort of accidental career in marketing started. And I started doing first work on the back end. I started, you know, website development, mobile apps, graphic design, and then ended up in events, and then ended up on the front end with brand and content. And at the time, I was still living in Europe. So I had the opportunity to work with, you know, some big brands there, including Adidas and Zara and a number of other brands. I then decided to move back to Hawaii. This was a number of years ago, but at the time I had just finished up like a book series. I moved back to Hawaii and I was like, what do I want to do next? And that was when I entered the corporate world and I was director of marketing for a big sort of hotel in Waikiki. So I did that for a number of years and then the pandemic hit, at which point I pivoted again and I built a large platform on TikTok and built a leadership consulting business purely off TikTok and did that for a number of years and then decided I needed a change because I had been in Hawaii for quite some time by that point. And decided
I'm starting to notice a little bit of a trend here.
And then I decided to move back to New York. And so ended up back here and I started my own business, which is what I do now as a brand advisor and a content strategist as a fractional CMO. The name of my business is Kizna. And right now I work primarily with high performing startups or VC-backed startups, some small, medium enterprises, and a few founders and leaders on their own personal brand. So that's what I do now.
Wow. I love your journey. I have so many questions and just trying to keep like a Rolodex of them in my mind. But so first of all, I want to say, I believe that Pia is the one who introduced us on like social media, I believe, which is absolutely awesome because I love having her on and we've become such great friends. So she's recommended a couple of people to the podcast and it's always been a pleasurable conversation. I can already tell that like you have so there's this like pattern. It's all these like multi-passionate, multi-talented people that just like kind of get attracted to each other in one way or another. Because as you were talking, I was just like, whoa, she did a lot. And I always do that to myself where I kind of reflect back and be like, well, you're always working like four or five different things or whatever it is. So it's like, it's the same energy kind of keeps shifting around with all these awesome people that are coming on the podcast. So thank you. Thank you for giving me, you know, a kind of a deeper insight into how you started. Let me ask you, the first question that popped in my head is like, as a child and going through all of that, what's that pressure like on you to go through? I mean, from the pianist to, I mean, everything you listed, I can't even list all the things, but how was that pressure as just kind of growing up in that environment?
You know, when I was younger, like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, as a child, you don't recognize the unusualness of your life. I thought it was normal. I thought what I was doing was normal. And, I loved what I did. I was never pressured to be a musician or to do music. It was my first love. It was what I was deeply curious about, passionate about. So everything was something that I enjoyed. It was only when I hit my teenage years, I think, and that's very normal because that's when you start to become self-conscious. You start to become self-aware. You start to understand the concept of fear in a lot of ways. When you're a child, you don't really understand fear. Then it started to change a bit, and I became very conscious, certainly, of how different my life was from most normal children. I also realized that there were things that, in order for me to get to the next level, what it would require from me, and moving through those fears and those challenges in that way. And then there reached a point, I think, once I hit my early 20s, where it just, that sort of pressure, sort of, it wasn't the way that it used to be as a teenager, but rather more about fear of success as my career started to grow. Like, as I did, you know, after my Carnegie debut, and then there was my London debut, and then the Amsterdam debut, and the Vienna debut, and each one was like the next level of my career and the next phase of my career that would open up things. And then there became, if anything, this kind of fear of success about, well, what happens if I get to that next level? Like, what if I don't meet the expectations of being at that level? And it became a different kind of
threshold is already so much higher.
Yeah, it became kind of a different sort of experience. So that was kind of, so it wasn't that I was pressured by people around me. It wasn't that kind of pressure. It was more the pressure on myself, I think, to be the artist that I wanted to be, to express myself in the way that I wanted to express. And I was always searching. And by the way, this is something that stays with you your whole life, because I still have this now, where you're always, you have a vision of something, right? You have an idea, a vision for something. How can I keep moving towards it? How can I realize this? How can I be in alignment with this? How can I express it honestly and authentically? So it was more about that, I think, the majority of my artistic career.
Yeah, I feel like even when you notice it later, like what you said, I think in your 20s, it's like there's almost this subconscious like compounding of that happens. And once you get to a place where like, oh man, I've been doing this for so long. Like it happened to me kind of in a similar way in sports, where I just had to kind of let go of the whole, I played soccer for a very long time. I felt that you don't notice it while you're in it at that younger age. And then once you get old, you're like, damn, that was literally my life. Like every story I had to tell was like, I was at a soccer tournament. I was doing this. Or I was you know, and I'm sure you, if you were to reflect back, there would be a lot of that. Like, oh, so how, in what time span did, for you did you start, you know, performing at these sort of next tier like halls and these performances and all? Like, in what time span does that happen? Does that start at like age 10 or does it start a little bit later?
The big hall started after age 17. So my first big hall was at 17 at Carnegie. Prior to that, though, I did make my, for example, like I remember my Japan debut. That was at age 13. And that was a big deal.
Are in that place? Like how many people are in the hall at that time?
It depends on the hall. Sometimes it can be like 800. It could be up to 4,000. It depends. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's crazy.
It was... yeah, it was quite unusual. I think an unusual childhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. And now you know, you've shifted through all these different things that you've done, and now you ended up in the world of content and branding and marketing and, you know, this whole thing, and you know, books and all this amazing stuff. And then, you know, you said the fiction books, which is even, you know, which is even more awesome, because it's just like, you know, stories and different things. Like, when did you start writing your first book?
So my first book I wrote after I left music. So writing is also, I think if I look back at my childhood, music, of course, but also reading and writing were tremendous aspects of my life. Like, I won writing competitions as a child. I wrote a lot. I loved it. But, you know, it was, and I have always been a voracious reader since I was a child, like just reading tons of books. So it was always a part of my life. And then after I left music, you know, I had time on my hands and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I had an idea for a novel. I had an idea for a story. And so I thought, okay, let me try writing it. Let me see where this goes. And that became the first novel of my fantasy series. It ended up becoming a series, that I wrote. But, it was such an interesting shift from being on stage, you know, in which everything about music is about something ephemeral. It's about the moment, right? It's the moment. Mm-hmm. It's live. It's when people are experiencing it in the moment, right? And so I was on stage my whole life under my name. And then when I came off stage and I wrote my first novel, I wrote it under a pen name. And this was very important to me. I wanted the safety of no one knowing who I was, and this kind of space in order to be able to explore the ideas and the themes and the questions that were important to me without anyone knowing it was Grace that was doing it, you know? And writing a novel is a very different sort of artistic experience than, for example, preparing for a concert tour or preparing for a performance. So it was such a powerful period of time for me, those years as an author. Definitely such a healing period of time for me, in which I got to really put on the page and explore a lot of things that mattered to me. And it also taught me a lot, I think, about artistic process, meaning that in musical performance, so much rests upon how the audience reacts to your performance, right? How many encores do you play? How much are they into it? You know, like, how do they respond? Are they with you while you're performing? With books is a very different experience. You know, it's something about the act of writing itself, the process itself, that already is so powerful. And then you release it out into the world and you have no control over how anyone's going to interpret it or understand it or connect with it. Years later, I'm still getting like emails from readers who are finding my books and still reading it. And, you know, it's a very different kind of paradigm than like a live musical concert, right? So it was such a fascinating period of time in my life, and I learned so much from it.
I love that. And I love the two different like perspectives that you have with those two different crafts. It's like the music is so present. It's in the moment. It only happens, like, no matter if somebody's recording or whatever, they're never going to feel that moment in when you were there performing in front of those, whether it's 800 people or 4,000 people, it doesn't matter. And versus like a book where it's going to have these like little waves that happen for the rest of who knows how long till books are still around, that it's always going to be, somebody's going to find it, post about it, tell other people about it. You see a little spike. You're like, what just happened? This is like 9 years later, you know? So that's the beautiful thing. And to me, the more I do this podcast and the more I talk to people who are, you know, now doing a lot of content creation or writing online or just even writing their blog, any kind of online based, you know, writing, a lot of them, I'm starting to sense they come from very different worlds where writing has always been some part of it. And that's, you know, my case as well through like my work. But I'm starting to realize that a lot of the folks, they have this trail, this kind of thread in their life at some point where writing mattered, but they didn't know in that moment how much I, whether it's journaling or drawing or whatever that might be. And it's amazing because then you get to this point of, it's almost like this point of awareness where you start to realize like, oh, there's people literally doing this and doing, you know, creating books or whatever that might be. Like, what can I do with it? And it becomes this, like for you, it was the book, you kind of released your name from that, you know, from that spotlight just to say, I want to have that space. I think some people have that subconsciously with like writing, because I know that was the case for me. And the more I talk to people on this podcast, I'm starting to realize that trend a little bit more as you kind of dig into different questions and different things. So it's amazing to hear that. And I think writing books is a, you know, completely different thing where, like you said, once it's out there, like there's no going back and really changing it. Like with a blog, you can go back and edit things and change them or whatever. When the book is printed and it's out there, there's none of that. And I think that's really beautiful to hear that you have this, you know, different perspective on that and how you approach it because of that end result being, you know, one is present, one is kind of trickling waves into the future.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a very interesting thing. And so it changes also the process of, you know, when I would perform. For example, let's say I go on concert tour and I have the same program that I'm playing at every concert, right? So it's the same pieces that I'm playing. But depending on the hall, depending on the instrument, depending on how you feel that day, depending on your vibe with the audience, little bits of the interpretation changes, right? Like you change things live in the moment you're doing this. With a book, the process itself is so different because you're thinking, because like you said, once you release it, it's out there. You can't go back and you're not going to change a phrase or whatever. So there's this tremendous sense of, I felt, how do I say this? Legacy almost? Do you understand what I mean? Uh-huh. Like as you're writing it, that these words are going to be around forever, as long as this book is being published.
They're stuck on that paper.
The creative approach to it is a little bit different because you have that so much in your mind about how can these words resonate and last, you know, for forever, right? And then you have readers who will come, you know, send me messages, and we do the same as readers where, you know, I first read this book years ago and I recently went back and reread it and I discovered new things in it and I discovered like aspects of it I didn't see before. And that's the whole thing, right, about words and books. So it is a very different creative process. I loved it very much.
Yeah. And I think it even applies for myself, at least, to like movies and shows. Like I love my fiance and I recently rewatched Seinfeld, for example, and all of the Seinfeld episodes. And, you know, that was one of those things that was a little bit past my generation. It was like one generation before me where Seinfeld was really relevant. But for me, every time it was on, I just didn't understand it as you know, when I was younger in my teens or whatever. And then it was, you know, at some point I remember watching another show and there was some sort of mention of it. And I was like, oh, I should go back to that. I started watching. I was like, oh, this is the funniest shit I've ever watched. Like, this is amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same thing you start to realize. And then my fiance and I rewatched it, you know, some episodes again. And right away you're catching different things, the way, you know, the actors are and, you know, different things like that.
Yeah.
So there is definitely that thing about, and that's why I actually started. So the funny thing is I actually kind of started doing this with books and audiobooks where I would buy a physical book. I'll read some of it through physical and then the rest, or I'll even repeat it on an audiobook. So I'll kind of like give my mind two different ways of absorbing information. And with different books, it's a different outcome. So I'm like, oh, and I just want to read this. I don't care about the audiobook so much. Maybe it's the tone of the voice of the person that's, you know, doing the voiceover or whatever that might be. But some other books, I'm like, oh, I can't read. Like, it's just too deep for me. I need to keep hearing this in my head a little bit more. So it's just like turning the brain like into different things. And then I pick up different things. I pick up different things from the book. I pick up different things from the audio thing. And then my kind of collectively could figure out, oh, this is all how it's kind of connected. So it's really weird. Like I'm still trying to figure out what that thing is, but it's just how I've been consuming it. It works for me.
I love that. I love the fact that what you said about like picking up different nuances and different things depending upon whether it's, you know, you're hearing it or whether it's you're visually reading it. I think that's absolutely true. It's so interesting, right? How the brain sort of takes in things and the things that we pick up on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so how long did you said you wrote 8 novels? How long did that take you to do, and over what span did you release those? Did they just kind of start popping out where you just kind of felt this creative flow for a long time, or what is it basically just kind of step at a one step at a time?
Well, in my, I treated it like a business. So
Oh, okay.
I put it out once a year, which is, by the way, a
Oh,
very
wow.
brutal schedule. Brutal
That's
schedule. I would not recommend it to anyone, but I did do that. So it was over the span of 8 years, and during that time, as I said, simultaneously, I was building a marketing consulting company that just accidentally
Okay.
kind of started. So
Yeah.
I was honing my sort of marketing skills at the same time in a variety of ways, and then this creative outlet at the same time.
How did marketing, when you got into the marketing side, how did that change your writing, or if it changed it at all? Like, did you
Oh,
start,
interesting.
yeah, catching different things where you were like, oh, you know, to make the book more interesting, like you can use, you know, maybe it's a little bit more storytelling or something like that. Did that have an effect on you while you're writing the book?
I think it was the opposite. The stronger I got as an
Okay. Okay.
author, the better my marketing became, or I understood certain things about certain principles of marketing better, let's say, because
Okay.
in the end, when people ask me, like, because I've done obviously a lot of different sorts of things in my life, I always tell them, but there's one thread, one invisible thread that ties all of them together, and that is human connection, right? Whether that's as a musician, whether that's as a writer, as an educator, as a leadership consultant, as a marketer, which is about communication. Everything is about human connection and about understanding sort of the dynamics of human behavior and human relationships better. And so, of course, the stronger I became as an author, the more I explored the nature of humanity and the complex ways in which we connect to one another. A character may not be likable at all, and you have to
Right.
write them that way. They can't be perfect characters, they have to be human. And the more I was able to kind of explore and express that through writing, the more I began to understand certainly the nuances of human behavior, content, all of that stuff in
Psychology,
marketing.
yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. I thought it would have been kind of the other way around, but I see what you mean now, to put it that way.
But I do have to say that the marketing did help me in terms of marketing my books. In that sense, it did influence me because I understood the business, I knew how to do certain things.
How did you go about marketing the book? Kind of, I think, kind of leads us into a little bit more of like the online stuff. But what was that process like? How seriously did you take, you know, building distribution channels? Did you know, taking kind of through that journey a little bit as you were, like, did the book come first and you're like, I'll figure out the rest later? Or did you kind of have things in place where you were just like, okay, since I do have a little bit of history with, you know, in the art world and all these other things, music and all this, even though you weren't using your name, did you kind of go at a very, as you said, you treat it like a business? Did you go, hey, I gotta line up a publisher and I gotta do this, or did you just kind of start writing and hope to like figure this whole thing out as you went along?
That's such a fantastic question. Okay, I'm going to see if I can break this down in a good way.
Take your
When I
time. Take your
started,
time.
yeah, when I started, like I said, when I started, I had no intention. It was just to kind of see if I could write this
Okay.
novel, right? I had an idea. I just kind of wanted to creatively explore it. And then as I was writing it, then my confidence sort of grew, and I was like, okay, I have something here, and I have this whole idea for a series. I can see it kind of stretching out. I think it always, okay. When I wrote it, as I said, it just came from an idea I had. However, I also had to think about, from the business perspective, what genre does this fall into? And so this is the
Okay.
marketing part of my brain that starts to kick in, right? Like, it was a very authentic, artistic, all of my books have been, what I wanted to write. But at the same time, I had to think, okay, when it's released, is it going to fall in the adult suspense category? Is it going to fall into the young adult fantasy category? Is it going to, if it does, the reason why we need to understand that is because then the other factors that go into the publishing, which is the business part of it, the cover art, right? What does the cover look like in relation to everything, all the other books in the genre? What is, you know, what is the kind of blurbs you want to get from whom that has influence in that genre? Who are you going to, all these things start to come into play. So you're right. I think for artists, the reason why it's so difficult, and I had the same sort of difficulty in music, you know, art and commerce have very, very different objectives, right? So one of the things that's difficult is being able to find the common ground and to make sure that, you know, you can survive and eat and live off of your art, but then at the same time, stay true to your art. So my approach to it, and I think it was easier with the books than it was in music, because in music, I was the product. I was the one being sold, me, right? With the books, it was an actual physical product. And somehow in my brain, that made it easier for me to kind of separate the two. So the story itself was always an honest expression of my creativity. I never compromised on that. But then as I started to talk about that story out in the world, how do I present it out in the world? How do I package it out into the world? That's when the business and the marketing part has to come into play. How do you position it in the right way? How do we speak about it in the right way? Who should be, like, you know, connecting with it? Who's the audience? You know, all of that stuff comes into play. And so I was, I think, very different from other authors who certainly don't have a business background or who don't have a marketing background, in the sense that I was very aggressive with how I promoted and marketed the books. Online, I was always, of course, very good at social media. So I employed social media tremendously to great effect at the time. You know, Instagram had just come on the scene. Twitter had been around for a while. And of course, Facebook was the great giant in the room during that period of time.
Yeah.
And so I leveraged the shit out of Facebook ads. It was also a wonderful sort of learning experience for me, because I learned a lot from doing it. And I realized, for example, when I wrote an adult, after I finished my fantasy series, I wrote an adult psychological suspense novel, a contemporary psychological suspense novel. And I found that knitters loved this genre of books. Like, they were obsessed with this kind of like mystery adult genre. And so I targeted them on Facebook. And so all of my books did hit the Amazon bestseller lists. And several of them have been translated into foreign editions in foreign languages that also did well in their respective countries, Amazon.
There.
But I was very, once I finished the creative aspect of it and I was happy with the story, then it was like the business and marketing thing kicked in. And I was like, okay, now this is the thing, how we're going to do it. And it was an interesting experience. But all the same things that I do now, I did back then, meaning I built a community of very, very rabid readers around that series, around my works, lots of community building, lots of sort of fandom kind of things. Tumblr was also big at the time, because I leveraged Tumblr a lot and you know, all of that stuff, and used it to worked with bloggers at the time, because book blogging was also huge. All of that stuff I leveraged to great effect. It's kind of what you see now. Right now, in terms of the book industry, you see Book Talk on TikTok, which is massively influential. You have book bloggers on YouTube now, so it's transferred over to video now more than anything. But it's the same concept of building a group of community around your work, getting them excited about it, and then launching.
Was this like a more... was it a mix of like virtual communities that on Facebook groups and different things, or was it a you know, more in like real life type of thing, where was that a book
online
type of
online? I have always leveraged, you can exponentially maximize what you would get in real life online, and so I have always leveraged the power of online.
And how important was, if you look at kind of the grand scheme of things, how important was community to your entire success of every book that you've put together, even just all of the books that you've really built, like, you know, kind of a quote unquote cult following around the series or whatever that might be? How influential was the community versus just doing, you know, like you said, Facebook ads or any kind of, you know, Twitter or whatever that might be?
Huge, huge. It's like, even now, my approach to brand and content is to always encourage building brand advocacy and community around you rather than spending, you know, tons and tons and tons of money on ads, which yes, can work to a certain extent, but there's a difference. You know, when you have a community around you, they become your evangelists. I mean, these people will hardcore are committed to you. They will amplify your voice, amplify everything you do, support you, cheer you on. And by the way, this is something I learned during my musician years. So when MySpace came out, I was, you know, still a concert musician, concert touring pianist, and I leveraged Twitter and MySpace to build a very strong community of fans that supported my musical career. I was one of the first musicians before any musician was on MySpace or Twitter. I was there first. And because I immediately saw the potential of it. I saw the potential for it to connect people all across the world around a particular idea, right? A particular concept, a particular person, a particular topic, right? And so I leveraged the shit out of it from like my musician years. So it's something that I understood from my musical career to my writing career, my business career. It's how I approach brand and content now and what I always advocate when I help brands build. The importance of building that community. I want to stress something too. This is really important. There's a difference between community and customers. And I think a lot of people make this mistake. Not every single customer will be in your community. And not every member in your community will be a customer, right? Okay. But it's important, even if there's people in your community who will never buy from you for whatever reason. Like I have people in my community now who wouldn't, I mean, they're not my ideal client. They're not my, I work with, right? But that doesn't negate their importance and their value because they are the 100%. Ones, they may never buy from you, but they're going to comment on everything you say, amplify everything you say, cheer you on, talk about you to everyone they can. This is priceless.
They become your marketing engine, basically.
Yes. So you really need to understand, and this is why, like for example, even with the books, the people who bought from Facebook ads were customers. Were they necessarily part of my community? No. Right?
They're customers. So exactly.
Customers and community are completely different. But if you can really focus on building that community, all the other stuff, reputation, trust, authority, all of that will have a huge effect. Yeah.
And this is interesting that this topic is coming up now because I was, I was in this process about 12 months ago where, basically my background is in like project management, agency, digital service work and different things like that, building products kind of more on the online side. And, marketing, I never really took it very seriously. I was always just good at building, getting things up and going, and then, either delegating it to somebody else or maybe automating it or sometimes even just letting products and things die out because I just wasn't as excited about it anymore. And about 12 months ago, I had run my agency from like 2018 to like 2020, end of last year. But prior to that, we had this whole thing where, we wanted to make sure that there was no single point of failure in the business because if the project manager is gone, somebody needs to be able to kind of shift in there, help out with certain things that are in the, So long story short, we went through this process about over a year and a half where we had somebody creating basically our entire end-to-end process on any given thing that we have to do that's client-facing, that's internal, whatever that might be. So I started creating this, having this idea of at some point this is going to become a course of some sort for people to be able to, if I'm a freelancer or an agency, I could basically take this. I always look at problems in one way. It's like, what did I not have when I started that I would have loved to have that other people still don't have at the moment? It's this kind of weird like matrix that I think to myself on. And I always think to myself, like, if I had somebody that would have said, hey, for, $2,000, I'm going to give you basically every single thing that you need to get your mind in the right setting to run an agency. Hey, you need to know how to onboard clients. You need to do this, that. Like this whole process of just giving you sort of this scoop, like the inside scoop. It doesn't need to be the exact thing you use, but at least like, oh, I have to think about this. I didn't think about that. I didn't know that I needed this. I need to protect myself, all these different things. And so for this year, I've been building this like course and I've had this, so much resistance because I just felt every time, like something, it was just kind of this transactional thing. And I was like, you know what? I think this needs a different kind of layer around it. So I pedaled backwards a little bit And I was like, all right, I think I need to start off with building the community first. Going to people, because I was going to be charging about $399 for this course, one-time fee. It's all yours, all the resources. Just make it very transparent, very... And I thought to myself, like, okay, most people don't finish courses anymore. You know, 50% of people or something, like when they take a course, they just don't finish it. So all this work that I've been, you know, all this resistance I'm working through, all this work I'm doing and all this other stuff now just kind of falls short with 50%. But then I took that and I said, okay, how do I get closer to 100%? And I feel like there's two ways. One is take the course, send it out there, and hope that a few people that have bought the course can join the community. That's one way. I don't think that's the right way. I think that's more, again, transactional. Oh, you're getting this because of this. The other way, what I thought about is like, well, I have a lot more to offer outside of just this course. So I looked at it from a perspective of I need to be able to constantly educate and guide people and help them in any way and potentially even learn something from them, right? Because consulting, freelance, when you sort of put it all into the same bubble, like it all varies. You know, things can be used from one to another and kind of moved around.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I started about 2 weeks ago. I took all the resources and everything that I had and I started plugging it into more of a community style and creating like an actual like online community. And I had about 300 people on the wait list for this course because I'd like published it on Twitter and people signed up and I had emails and all this other stuff. So I was like, okay, instead of charging $399 for the course and it kind of being like a, okay, we're down here type of thing, I would charge $299 for the community and anything, including that course and anything else that we decide to bring into a community, my other resources, as we kind of move through the process, I can, you know, create new courses, whatever ends up coming, they pay a one-time fee, their lifetime access, all of those resources will be theirs forever. They'll never lose that. And I felt to me, that was the more wholesome way of doing it because this course is very... kind of like what you said about a book. It's very modular. You kind of get it done, you ship it out, and you don't go back and change too many things. You might go back and re-record some things or whatever. But I feel like when you have this communication platform where you can, somebody posts something, hey, I have a question, I don't know how to do this. Some of that might not be covered in the course and you're missing out on helping more people or guiding them or whatever that might be. And so when you talk about community, I've shifted my mind around this a lot more recently is because I think that building community first, at least in my case, and then building the product and maybe even reshaping some of it based on the feedback and different things that I'll get exclusively from those folks, I think goes much longer in value and a more long-term beneficial like value than it is just for me to package this thing into a PDF and send it to you. So that's my long-winded way of saying like that's how much my gears have shifted in terms of how I'm building things in community and different things like that.
Yeah, because it's about long-term vision, long-term relationships, right? That's the difference with like a short-term product thing that's just comes out and then that's it. Right. Rather than thinking, okay, how can I build something where, you know, even 1 year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, you know, it's still connected to, you know, whatever it is that I want to do. I also have a private paid community that I started many months ago that it was the same idea. You know, we do guest masterclasses. I don't do courses because I don't take courses. So I also, I never buy them or finish them. But I do masterclasses. That's kind of my thing. So I will, for example, do an hour and a half masterclass and community members can come. Same thing with these guest masterclasses that people that I bring in and they give a masterclass. And these are all sort of evolving resources, right? On different topics over time, different areas, and the community continues to grow. So I think that's a fantastic approach. And I think more than anything, those, again, that human connection, right? Those relationships, they matter. And, you know, we live in an age that what pisses me off so much sometimes on social is, you know, these cheap tactics and cheap gimmicks and shallow, you know, takes on things. And you cannot shortcut time and you cannot shortcut the human element. And the human element are things like building relationships. And that takes time. No, you would be God if you could shortcut that. Nobody can shortcut that. It literally takes time. And it needs, you know, time to evolve, time for trust to build, time for all of it. So, you know, anything, I think, in which human relationship is valued, right? And it's taken into consideration is a win, I think, is always a win.
100%.
You can't go wrong with that. You can't go wrong with that. Yeah.
100%. And I think I think we're all starting to, at least for me, social media has become it has kind of two sides of it, but when we talk about human connection, it becomes the simple connector and then take that offline, like go and connect in real life with some of those people if you can. And I think that's the benefit that social media can add to human, because some of the people that I wish lived around me so I can have that in real life community, I've met on Twitter or, you know, different conversations that I've had with people. And so to me, that there's a huge, I mean, we all, you know, in one way or another, when somebody has a book coming out or whatever that might be, like in a very authentic and organic way, like you help those people out. And
absolutely.
Whether it's like posting through a newsletter or shouting them out on social media and like reading their book and giving honest feedback. And like, these are all things that that's also steered me, aside from the agency course or whatever, it's what's also steered me into, you know, I've been in the freelance world for a very long time, and just being able to connect with those people and have like one-on-ones, or even, you know, one of the things part of the community is going to be bringing people from the outside that can teach us all something, whether it's like, hey, here's how you can use AI in your business, or here's how you should, you know, think about this sales process or marketing or whatever, just some sort of additional knowledge that trickles in over a long period of time. And I truly don't think that agencies and freelance like work, consulting work, or whatever you want to call it, is ever going to go away, because I think if anything, it's just growing because of platforms, whether it's like Upwork or whatever that might be, because a lot of people now, they can look at it and say, oh, I have to pay this person $100,000 salary, they have to get benefits and all these other things. When in reality, you could probably just go on some platform out there, hire somebody for that project or maybe a long-term contract, and they get more of their time and freedom. They don't feel like they're chained to a desk for whatever reason. And the business gets to benefit more, even on the monetary side or the quality of work, because that person doesn't feel drained and tedious and like, oh, I'm keep doing the same thing over and over again. It's like, no, sometimes it's nice to have two or three variety of clients, because then you can work on different things and keep your mind rolling in a different way. And so I really, really want to help, you know, had a long freelance journey from like 2014 to about, you know, more recently, you started doing some consulting on Upwork as well, just because I enjoy it. It's like, that's become sort of like my side hustle in a way. It's like I build products, I do all these other things, but like this is my human connection way of like helping people and making some extra money and really seeing their business thrive. And so I really, really appreciate that human connection thing, because it's so important, and it's becoming I think more and more important when we're trying to cut through a lot of this technology noise and all this AI shit going on, and now people creating movies and you don't know what's real, what's not real, this whole thing. And so, I think that definitely starts to become a much, much more embraced way of like meeting with people. And I've even said, just to, for this podcast, I was talking to somebody in my last episode. One of my dreams for this podcast is to be able to go to people, go to their place, or have them fly out here or whatever, and have in-person conversations, because the energy is different. The vibe is different. You start to realize different things about the person. You know, you notice like almost little quirks and things. You're like, I do that. Like, I didn't know anybody else that, you know, it starts these connections go much deeper. And I think with community and with just connecting yourself with people that, and either you can learn from, that you can help, that whatever that trade-off is there, or even if there isn't one, it's always, I think, a value add for everybody that's involved.
I love that. And I think you're right. Humanity, I have said this time and time again, in the age of AI, humanity will be the most number one critical factor in the years to come. I cannot emphasize this enough, right? It was this, your humanness, all the qualities that make you human are going to be absolutely critical. So there's that for sure. That what you said, as these kind of, because of the way technology is advancing, connection is critical, because it's so easy, especially as an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, to feel alone. That's a big part of why I created my community too, for business owners, so that we do co-working sessions, we do writing sessions together, just so we're not alone in our apartment. You know, we I feel some sort of human energy. So there's that. The other thing that I love about what you brought up, because I absolutely agree 100% with this, is the rise of independence. And I think we're already starting to see it this year. We're going to see it exponentially grow in the years to come. We see it with fractional work, which is what I do as a fractional CMO, for the very reasons you stated. For the employer side, the business side, you can get a C-suite level of expertise and advisor to come on board without the salary and the benefits and all the expense of it. This is enormously useful for startups, businesses who are trying to scale. This is incredibly important. And then, of course, on the worker side, for the independent side, like you said, we can do different things creatively. We can take on different projects. It's interesting. You have more flexibility in your life, in your schedule. So I think absolutely moving forward, that's going to be what the future of work holds. Yeah.
I agree. I completely agree. And so talking a little bit about your like branding and marketing and content marketing work that you do, is it agency style? Is it just you doing a lot of the stuff? You have a small team? Like, what's your, if you can share any like information about what kind of client base you're attracting or what you want to work with? Like, I'd love to hear a little bit about that, because there's just so many different ways of delivering content and who writes it and what brands you're working. Like, there's so many little factors. So I'd love to know kind of how your journey's been there and how long you've actually been doing that.
Sure. So I have like two different sort of tier levels that I work with. So my big sort of work is as I said, a fractional CMO, in which I get brought into startups. And when we talk about fractionals, where the difference with consulting is that consultants are usually brought in for a particular project, and the scope is quite narrow. It's like you come in and this is the problem we need you to fix, or we need you to do this. Mm-hmm. As a fractional, you're actually embedded within the leadership, right? So I am representing the marketing for this particular organization type of thing.
Okay.
And because you're embedded in the leadership, it gives you a much broader perspective of the entire organization as a whole. You get to work with all the different departments, which is important in order to be able to create brand and strategy, right? You need to know what's happening in business dev. You need to know what's happening on the product side of things, all this stuff. So that's what I do when I work in that frame. I help them to build a brand. That's usually where I start from. Like, what is your brand? What is it? You know, what do you want it to be? How we're going to, what is this story? What is it? You know, all the ground foundational framework, right? We start with that. And then after we do that and we get it to a point where everybody's, you know, on board and we're all in consensus about it, then it's about, okay, how do we translate this into our messaging moving forward? And then at that point, there are a couple of different options. This tier level of clients I work with, sometimes they have people, either they have an existing team or they have people that can implement it. In that case, then I just become sort of the strategic head of it, and I just kind of tell them what to do. Other startups will say, hey, we're starting from the ground. We have nothing. We have no one. We have nothing. Do you have any recommendations? In which case, then I tap into my network. I say, hey, I can start to bring, you know, these people on board. So that's kind of the first tier level, the upper tier level of what I work with. Within that, I also have, for example, organizations I've worked with previously, and then the founder wants to create a separate personal brand for themselves, or an executive wants to create a personal brand for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I take that up kind of on a case-by-case basis, and I help them to do that. The second tier level that has, I want to say, recently started, and I started putting it into place about 4 months ago, is for small businesses or solopreneurs, people who usually, I'm trying to, if I think of my client base, they're usually people who kind of been around for a while. Like, I'm like financial advisors who have their own firm and they've been around for a while, or like lawyers who, you know, who've been around for a while, but they just don't have any expertise or knowledge to be able to build their own personal brand online. And so that's kind of a secondary tier level that I now currently work with. And basically it's what I do on the organizational level, but I scale it down for like the individual, right? The person who has their little small business, their solopreneurship, and they want to build their freelance writing, or they want to do this or that. So that's kind of the second level that I work with. So that's kind of what my workload right now, what my business looks like. I love it. I mean, I love it.
That's awesome.
It's something which I think is so important. So never underestimate the importance of loving what you do. I really enjoy it. And it's such a creative endeavor, and it's really helping them. It's also a deeply, I think, internal journey, because in order for them to realize all of these things externally, everybody has to know internally who they are. So it's really a process of self-discovery in order to be able to discover that. So it's a tremendous joy for me to do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Is there one you prefer doing over the other?
It's hard to say. You know, I'll be honest. When I first started the second tier level, I didn't know or think if I could enjoy it, because I like the challenge of working with organizations. But I have to say, I like it now. I do like it because it's very personal. You're really working with
human connection.
Yeah, human connection, right? And so they each have their own merits. You know, the organizations are challenging. I like that challenge, and I like being able to think of it in that way. And then, of course, the personal connection, working with someone who's, you know, I've had my business for 15 years, Grace, and I don't know social media, and I'm like, and you're helping them, right? To kind of, like, it's a beautiful thing. I love it. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. That's, I think, the more of the fulfilling side, while the other stuff is like, oh, you get challenged, you get to learn new things or whatever, but when you can bring that down to like a person that you're actually kind of helping them with their life, it goes a much longer way with you and with them, type of thing. So no, that's really, really awesome. And thanks for sharing anything. Is there anything else that, you know, you've got going on, anything else you want to chat about, what's going on in the world? I feel like we tapped into a lot of stuff here today, and I'm just like really, really happy that Pia connected us, because I love hearing about people's journeys. And, you know, the whole thing about the podcast is like just talking to people who, you know, started something or working on something, they have a plan for something going forward, whatever that might be, and just sharing that spotlight, you know, on those people. To, you know, it's not a big podcast, it's not anything of that, but I think you know, when you say you've done the music thing, you've done the writing thing, it's like some people consume things differently, and some of the stuff that they'll hear on the podcast will have a different level of value versus the stuff that they read that I might be posting or sharing or a newsletter or whatever that might be. So I think there's just, you know, like you said, merits to both things in one way or another. This one is just the distribution is there, but it's not like, oh, you know, you could post something on social media and, you know, 50,000 people can hear it. So it's just a matter of, you know, getting as many awesome people conversations in here and just sharing that, because essentially this kind of stuff is what I want to, you know, incorporate into the community as well, and bring this sort of value from somebody that's done, you know, like yourself, so many different things, and you have so much experience and different things you could share, even the stuff that you're doing now, you know, working with some of the personal brands and all that sort of other stuff. So that's, I think, the really, really awesome thing when you kind of get, you know, the beautiful thing about the internet, when you get connected with people, you can hear their story. Like, I don't know if I would have ever met this person in real life, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if we would have run into each other or something like that. Yeah. So I really, really appreciate it. And yeah, like I said, if there's anything else that's at the top of the mind that you want to chat about, I'm completely open. But
I really appreciate you having me here, and I agree on the value and importance of the art of conversation. So, you know, I deeply enjoyed our time together today. I'm trying to think if there's something to leave everyone with, but, you know, I think if you're listening to this podcast,
let me ask you this. Let me ask you a quick question. Sorry, I don't want to cut off your thought process, but I wanted to ask you, like, you know, stepping into all the worlds that you've been part of, and now going into, you know, doing a lot more of the social media stuff and writing online and writing for other people and helping them craft their things, what is a common thread amongst, you know, some more of the personal brands that you're helping build that people are struggling with that you can kind of, you know, share with people on the podcast, that you can be like, hey, this is not something that's only happening to you. I'm seeing it with people that are, you know, financially at a certain threshold, or, you know, they don't have this, but they're trying to, you know, whatever that little knickknack of advice might be that you're starting to see, because I think that would probably help.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one number one thing, and it doesn't matter if it's a personal brand, it doesn't matter if it's an organizational brand, it doesn't matter. There's one common thread.
I love this. What is it?
I'm trying to dramatic pause here.
We're going to put some theme music behind this.
The number one issue always is to be yourself.
Yes.
This is the greatest struggle, human struggle. To be who you are. Isn't it crazy? To honor yourself, to accept yourself, to understand yourself, and that it's okay to be yourself and just be yourself. You don't have to be anything else than that. That is the number one thing, always.
Ooh, that one cuts deep with a lot of people that I know, and it cuts deep with me because it's always this journey. And I think that's the beautiful thing about writing is that, you know, especially like I do a lot of, I always show like a notebook that's like to all this, you know, hand journaling and writing and stuff like that. And I feel like that's one physical way that translates into an emotional way that you start digging deeper in who you really are and the things that excite you, the things you're passionate about, things you love, the things you don't love, the things you don't care to do that are not, like, you start to phrase things differently in your brain. And I feel like being yourself are all of those things coming together and just accepting what it is and working on the things you need to feel like you need to work on and the things that you're like, no, I'm perfectly okay with this and this is me and this is how I want to do it, then that's you. So I love that and I really appreciate that because it also resonates with me. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Well, Grace, it was a pleasure having you on. Do you want to have, a few seconds here to share with people where they can follow you, where they can, you know, your books or anything else that you want to throw out there that people can, you know, get more information about you?
Sure.
I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm excited to hopefully have you back for, you know, episode two because
absolutely.
There's so many things that we can talk about. Yeah.
Well, in terms of socials, I am primarily active on Twitter, X, and you can find me at Kizuna NYC. That's KIZUNANYC. If you would like more information on what I do in terms of my marketing, branding, content services, you can find me at KizunaNYC.com. And if you are interested in my private community, which is for founders, entrepreneurs, small business owners, solopreneurs, as long as you have been in full-time business for at least a year, that's the criteria for membership for our community. You can find information on that at kizunastudio.co.
Okay, cool. Awesome. I really appreciate that. And I love all that. I love all the things that you're doing and your beginnings are truly awesome. So thanks for sharing that with me as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Z. Really enjoyed it.